This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Alexander Grabois, who is with the U.S. Grains Council. We're going to dig a little deeper into a recent corn report that could benefit U.S. corn exports, and that's coming up for you in just a few moments. It's just last week we got cattle on feed numbers from USDA. Shel Shagham is a USDA livestock analyst.
The number of cattle on feed on December 1st was about 12 million head, which was about 3% above a year ago. During November, about 1.9 million head of cattle were placed in U.S. feedlots, which is about 2% below a year ago. Feedlots marketed, just under 1.8 million head, which was about 7% below a year ago.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Alexander Grabois, who is with the U.S. Grains Council. The position is Manager of Global Strategies and Trade. And Alexander, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Tony. It's a pleasure to be on.
Okay, let's start first off with you. We're going to work our way into U.S. Grains Council and the work that you're doing there and a report dealing with corn in just a moment. But let's set the table with who Alexander is and your pathway to the U.S. Grains Council. Where did it start and how did you get where you are today?
Of course. Well, thank you very much. So I'm from the Northeast in New Jersey. I've always been working in the international trade realm. So I studied international relations at Seton Hall University, and I have a master's in public administration from Baruch College in New York City. So when I graduated, I started working for the Chilean government through their organization called Pro Chile. And they were responsible for export promotion of goods and services. And that took me on a interesting path through the Midwest and the Northeast, representing them in different capacities. And about a year ago, actually, I joined the U.S. Grains Council, and it's definitely been a great experience, and it's definitely fun to enjoy that transition into the benefiting the U.S. producers and working on the agriculture side.
Well, and speaking of that, U.S. Grains Council kind of identifies some of what the Grains Council does in the name, and it's promoting U.S. grains, but that's not all. What's the elevator speech for USGC?
Of course. So the USGC, we are a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C., but with presence worldwide. And our main objective is essentially to promote and highlight the U.S. feed grains in markets worldwide. So when we say feed grains, we focus on corn, barley, sorghum, ethanol, and then corn co-products. And we feel that this is a good way for us. We're all membership organizations, so a lot of our members are different state checkoffs or agribusiness members, and it allows us to really expand our scope. We are a non-lobbying organization, so we don't handle anything with U.S. Congress or U.S. government. We do receive funding from USDA, so we are an ag cooperator. And our work is primarily focused on the international side.
Okay. As one of those products, you will, that the U.S. Grains Council is focused on, one of those is the corn that's grown in the U.S. And you put out a report, the Grains Council does, and this is an origins report, corn origins report. What can you tell us about that?
Of course. So essentially, this was a report that we have been working on over the last couple of years. And before I get started, I do want to thank the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council, North Dakota Corn Utilization Council, and the South Dakota Corn Utilization Council. They were the key supporters in this project, and without them, a lot of this would not be possible. But essentially, what we did in this project, we're looking to aim to benefit the U.S. farmer by improving perception on U.S. corn on a global scale. And one of the ways that we have been looking at this is by highlighting and identifying competitive advantages. So within the study, we took corn that had been re-imported, so essentially U.S. corn that was shipped overseas. We brought it back, as well as South American corn. And we conducted lab studies to essentially see how the performance would be for the broiler industry. And what we found is that the U.S. corn has a more efficient feed conversion rate. And essentially, because it was lower than that of other origins, it means that the birds that were fed this corn require less volume within the 35-day growth phase. And based on this metric, we could see that poultry operations worldwide would be able to see significant savings if they incorporate U.S. corn to their portfolio.
So I'm looking at this report, and again, it's assuming, 60,000 new chicks are added per week. You're throwing in like 5% bird loss in there, a feed cost, and some cost savings. This is really an apple-to-apple comparison or a corn-to-corn comparison between countries and their corn products. Is that a safe assumption?
And that's essentially what we were going for. And by doing so and by keeping a lot of the conditions the same through this analysis, we were really able to pinpoint where U.S. corn performs well. And one of the things that we found through the feed conversion rate and being able to explain that through the fact that U.S. corn has a soft endosperm, so that will help play a role in that feed efficiency because it will break down easier and the chicks can digest the corn easier. And what we find with this is that this can highlight concerns that we see from international customers on U.S. corn quality and really show what sets us apart. For example, starch extractability, and we understand that there are sometimes concerns on broken corn foreign materials. But what we're also finding is that even though U.S. corn soft endosperm does sometimes run the risk of increased breakage, performance regarding digestibility is not compromised. As a matter of fact, broken corn retains over 95% of its nutritional value.
So when we look at this, and again, how is this information then taken to buyers, and how does it help move more U.S. corn?
Of course. What we're looking to do, and when we speak with international poultry operations and international customers, we're really going to highlight the increased profitability and increased savings. So as you saw in the report, savings would be about 2 to 3 cents per bird. While it doesn't sound that much, when you really see the notable increases are when you get into the numbers that many of these operations are managing on a daily basis. So that will get us into the hundreds and thousands of dollars. And essentially as a next step, we are looking to get more awareness on the international side through our customers. So what we're looking to do is essentially conduct commercial trials with overseas broiler operations so that we can apply the results that we saw in the lab setting and throw them in a larger scale and really be able to verify the numbers and verify the findings so that when we continue to promote and speak with people like yourself or international customers, we want essentially our clients to understand, if I want to maximize my potential, I will be using U.S. corn.
You know, one of the things we didn't really dive in deep on is the work that you do specifically. And obviously we're talking about the Corn Origins Report, but as the manager of global strategies and trade, obviously this corn report would fit under what you're focused on, but what else do you focus on for the U.S. Grains Council?
So I work a lot on our corn portfolio, managing special projects such as the Corn Origins Report that we're speaking about today, others regarding grain storage management practices, highlighting the superiority of U.S. corn in the wet milling industry. So a big part of my role is also to engage with international customers and really be able to show what the benefits are of U.S. feed grains. I also do some work with our international offices as far as managing different projects or helping with grain quality reports. So it's definitely very diverse. I'd say no 2 days are exactly the same.
Well, as we kind of wrap things up, you mentioned a couple of key components here. One, you mentioned the members and the organizations at the state level. And you also mentioned USDA, and through funding like The Foreign Market Development, or FMD funds, and the Market Access Program, or MAP funds, those are vital to really the work that U.S. Grains Council does. Is that true?
Absolutely. I think we're always very fortunate for our members that are really able to see the vision that we have as we develop projects and really try to put U.S. feed grains on the map worldwide. I think having that global vision makes our job easier on a day-to-day basis, and our members definitely have that understanding going forward, whether it be through some, in the case of this project where we had funding from our members, and also just participation in global events. A lot of our members do take a lot of time to travel for different conferences or to speak in different engagements. So we do find that they're very committed, and it's something that we hang our hat on that. And as far as USDA funds, being an ag cooperator does give us a lot of additional resources and really the ability to take that next step and grow both our projects and our initiatives and really allow us to be creative as we benefit the U.S. producer and benefit U.S. exports.
Well, there are plenty of opportunities for producers to learn more about what the U.S. Grains Council is doing. And some of those opportunities involve the ability to actually get outside of our own little world and see how the rest of the world sees U.S. grains, things like the annual membership and international marketing conference coming up in February in Central America. And then the website's got great resources, too. If we wanted to learn more about the Grains Council, where would we find you online?
Yes, so we have a very detailed website. You'll even be able to find the full Corn Origins Report, along with our Corn Harvest Quality and Corn Export Cargo Reports that will go into grain quality, many of our other studies. I definitely recommend that. We are very active in social media, on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. So we're always able to be reached. And of course, if anybody that has any questions, they're more than welcome to reach out, and we're happy to help however we can.
You can find the U.S. Grains Council online at grains.org. The Manager of Global Strategies and Trade with the U.S. Grains Council is Alexander Grabois and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Manager of Global Strategies and Trade with the U.S. Grains Council, Alexander Grabois.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with the U.S. Grains Council. They're online, grains.org.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
It appears hog producers are trying to keep a lid on production by reducing farrowings and balancing that out with more pigs per litter.
That is largely what appears to be happening.
USDA livestock analyst Shale Shackham, USDA's new hogs and pigs report showing farrowings down 4% in the September to November quarter, with pigs per litter up 4%. Producers also intend to cut farrowings for this next quarter and the next one after that.
Their returns have been weak. They've been looking at relatively low hog prices. We have seen declining corn prices, but for the most part, I think that they're looking at, you know, having seen hog prices that were at or below break even. And that's sort of conditioning them to pull in the reins on production.
The report shows the breeding inventory December 1st down 3% from a year ago. Total inventory, 75 million head, up less than 1% from last year. Gary Crawford, Washington.